we go through weeks and weeks of reconditioning. The centrifuge, he muttered. Amanda said, I'll stay here, Lars, if that's what you want. You go to Selene and talk this out with Martin.
No, he said immediately. I won't leave you here.
But?
You come to Selene with me. I'll talk to Humphreys, assuming he'll agree to talk to me.
Amanda smiled and kissed his cheek. We can put an end to this before it becomes an out-and-out war. Pulling her to him, Fuchs said gently, I hope so. I truly hope so. She sighed. That's more like it, she thought. That's more like the man I love.
But he was thinking, it's Amanda that Humphreys wants, nothing else. And the only way he'll get Amanda is over my dead body.
She's coming here? Martin Humphreys asked, hardly daring to believe what his aide had just told him. Here? To Selene? Diane Favord allowed a tiny frown of displeasure to crease her forehead. With her husband, she said. Humphreys got up from his high-backed chair and practically pranced around his desk. Despite his aide's sour look, he felt like a little kid anticipating Christmas. But she's coming to Selene, he insisted. Amanda is coming to Selene. Fuchs wants to talk to you face to face, Favord said, folding her arms across her chest. I doubt that he'll let his wife get within a kilometer of you. That's what he thinks, Humphreys countered. He turned to the electronic window on the wall behind his desk and tapped at his wristwatch several times. The stereo image on the widescreen flicked through several changes. Humphreys stopped it at an alpine scene of a quaint village with steeply pitched roofs and a slim church steeple against a background of snow-covered peaks.
That's ancient history, Fairford thought. There hasn't been that much snow in the Alps since the great avalanches.
Turning back to her, Humphreys said, Fuchs is coming here to surrender. He'll try to wheedle as much of the 10 million we offered him as he can get. But he's bringing Amanda because he knows, maybe in his unconscious mind, maybe not consciously, but he knows that what I really want is Amanda. I think we should look at this a little more realistically, Favord said, stepping slowly toward the desk. Humphreys eyed her for a moment. You think I'm being unrealistic? I think that Fuchs is coming here to negotiate your buyout of his company. I very much doubt that his wife will be part of the deal. He laughed. Maybe you don't think so. Maybe he doesn't think so, but I do. That's what's important. And I bet that Amanda does, too.
Fairford had to deliberately keep herself from shaking her head in disagreement. He's insane about this woman. Absolutely gonzo over her. Then she smiled inwardly. How can I use this? How can I turn his craziness to my advantage?
Dossier, Oscar Jimenez. When he finished the New Morality High School at the age of 17, Oscar was sent to far-off Bangladesh for his 2 years of public service. It was compulsory. The New Morality demanded 2 years of service as partial repayment for the investment they had made in a youth's education and social reformation. Oscar worked hard in what was left of Bangladesh. The rising sea levels and the terrifying storms that accompanied each summer's monsoon inundated the low-lying lands. Thousands were swept away in the floods of the Ganges. Oscar saw that many of the poor, miserable wretches actually prayed to the river itself for mercy. In vain. The swollen river drowned the heathens without pity. Oscar realized that just as many of the faithful were drowned also. Luck touched him again once he finished his 2 years of public service. The New Morality administrator in Dhaka, an American from Kansas, urged Oscar to consider accepting a job in space, far away from Earth. Oscar knew better than to argue with authority, but he was so surprised at the idea that he blurted, "But I'm not an astronaut." The administrator smiled a kindly smile. "There are all kinds of jobs up there that need to be filled. You are fully qualified for many of them." "I am?" Oscar's qualifications, as far as he knew, were mainly lifting and toting, handling simple invoices and following orders. With a nod, the administrator said, "Yes. And, of course, there is God's work to be done out there among the godless humanists and frontier ruffians." Who could refuse to do God's work? Thus, Oscar Jimenez went to Ceres and was hired by Helvetia Limited to work in their warehouse.
Cellini's Hotel Luna had gone through several changes of management since it was originally built by the Yamagata Corporation. In those early days, just after the lunar community had won its short, sharp war against the old United Nations and affirmed its independence, tourism looked like a good way to bring money into the newly proclaimed Cellini. Masterson Aerospace's lunar-built clipper ships were bringing the price of transportation from Earth down to the point where the moderately well-heeled tourist, the type who took adventure vacations to Antarctica, the Amazonian rainforest, or other uncomfortable exotic locales, could afford the grandest adventure vacation of them all, a trip to the moon. Sadly, the opening of the hotel coincided almost exactly with the first ominous portents of the Greenhouse Cliff. After nearly half a century of scientific debate and political wrangling, the accumulated greenhouse gases in Earth's atmosphere and oceans started an abrupt transition in the global climate. In swift succession, disastrous floods inundated most coastal cities. Earthquakes devastated Japan and the American Midwest. Glaciers and ice packs began melting down, raising sea levels worldwide. The delicate web of electrical power transmission grids collapsed over much of the world, throwing hundreds of millions into the cold and darkness of pre-industrial society. More than a billion people lost their homes, their way of living, everything that they had worked for. Hundreds of millions died. Tourism trickled down to nothing except the extremely wealthy, who lived on their financial mountaintops in ease and comfort despite the woes of their brethren. Hotel Luna became virtually a ghost facility, but it was never shut down. Grimly, hopefully, foolishly, one owner after another tried to make at least a modest success of it. To a discerning visitor, the lavish, sprawling lobby of the hotel would appear slightly seedy. The carpeting was noticeably threadbare in spots. The oriental tables and easy chairs were scuffed here and there. The ornate artificial floral displays drooped enough to show that they needed to be replaced. But to Lars Fuchs's staring eyes, Hotel Luna's lobby seemed incredibly posh and polished. He and Amanda were riding down the powered stairway from the hotel entrance up in the Grand Plaza. Glistening sheets of real, actual water slid down tilted slabs of granite quarried from the lunar highlands. The water was recycled, of course. But to have a display of water, what elegance! "Look," Fuchs exclaimed, pointing to the pools into which the waterfalls splashed. "Fish! Live fish!"
Beside him, Amanda smiled and nodded. She had been brought to the hotel on dates several times years ago. She remembered the Earthview restaurant with its hologram windows. Martin Humphreys had taken her there. The fish in those pools were on the restaurant's menu. Amanda noticed that there were far fewer of them now than there had been back then.
As they reached the lobby level and stepped off the escalator, Fuchs recognized the music wafting softly from the ceiling speakers. A Haydn quartet. Charming. Yet he felt distinctly out of place in his plain dark gray coveralls, like a scruffy student sneaking into a grand palace. But with Amanda on his arm, it didn't matter. She wore a sleeveless white pantsuit. Even zippered up to the throat, it could not hide her exquisitely curved body. Fuchs didn't pay any attention to the fact that the spacious lobby was practically empty. It was quiet, soothing, an elegant change from the constant buzz of air fans and faint clatter of distant pumps that was part of the everyday background of Ceres. As they reached the registration desk, Fuchs remembered all over again that Martin Humphreys was footing their hotel bill. Humphreys had insisted on it. Fuchs wanted to argue about it as they rode a Humphreys fusion ship from Ceres to Cellini, but Amanda talked him out of it. "Let him pay for the hotel, Lars," she had advised, with a knowing smile. "I'm sure he'll take it out of the price he pays you for Helvetia." Grudgingly, Fuchs let her talk him into accepting Humphreys's generosity. Now, at the hotel desk, it rankled him all over again. When it had originally opened as the Yamagata Hotel, there had been uniformed bellmen and women to tote luggage and bring room service orders. Those days were long gone. The registration clerk seemed alone behind his counter of polished black basalt, but he tapped a keyboard, and a self-propelled trolley hummed out of its hidden niche and rolled up to Fuchs and Amanda. They put their two travel bags onto it and the trolley obediently followed them into the elevator that led down.